Radio and broadcasting today with the help of my good friends Don and Doug at BBS Radio outside of Houston, Texas. And I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. The purpose of my show is to make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that if we all work together, we can create a much better and happier Earth. I've had some technical difficulties on my end, but my good friend Temple Melville is there. Temple, can you hear us okay?
I can hear you absolutely fine, Ted, yes.
Good, good. I'm so glad. At least someone's plugged into video, so that's good. That's good. Well, at any rate, Temple's a very interesting fellow. With the cryptocurrency, that's come up here the last, 5 or 10 years, Temple decided to do something good for humanity in the world and create a crypto coin that actually does good work for people. And I'd love to, Temple, go ahead and explain how you got interested in this and how your new coin came about.
Okay, well, the first thing I should say is I've been very involved with charities and so on basically all my life. I mean, I was the vice chairman of the Gurkha Welfare Trust, which is a big military charity here in the UK. I was very interested when cryptocurrencies first started because, amongst other things, I did mathematics, high-end mathematics at university. So I was very into algorithms and all sorts of other things at that time. And when, you know, the Bitcoin white paper, as it were, was promulgated, then I was very keen on it because I could see right away, A, it was mathematical and therefore a really good thing. And secondly, I could see that it was potentially groundbreaking and world-changing. I became interested and I spent quite some considerable time learning about how blockchain worked and so on. And I am, in fact, a blockchain instructor. So as time went on, what became clear was that there was going to be a niche for different cryptocurrencies to do different things. And at the time I'm talking about, there might have been 300 or 400 different cryptos. Now there's over 20,000, which is quite amazing really in itself. I got involved the early part of, or late part of 2015, early part of 2016 with Spotcoin. And the person who owned Spotcoin was a one-man band. He had no helpers really. And myself and two business partners bought out the IP and the coin he had, and we set about changing things. What we did was we decided that, well, the first thing we decided was that we were in fact on the counterparty protocol, and that was really not fit for purpose. So we started looking for a new protocol that we could use, and eventually we came on to Ether and ERC20 tokens, which are so easy to use and so on. And we set about making sure that what we were doing was going to be acceptable to the public and to different people to be used for good. And just to give you a little example of that, so that makes it sort of straightforward, we were always looking for different things we could give to people who were in need. We came across some people who were manufacturing tracksuits, and they were intending to actually burn a whole lot of tracksuits, which is not a good thing for the world or for anything else. And we bought the tracksuits using Spotcoin. And we then took the tracksuits and distributed them to people who needed clothes, basically. So that was a win-win all round.
Wow, wonderful.
People who needed the tracksuits got them. The people who sold them actually didn't have to spend any money to actually destroy them. And they got something that they could use for a variety of different things themselves. So that's kind of one of the ways that we work with people.
Oh, amazing. That's amazing. I thought about using, have there been many others like yourself who've used cryptocurrencies for doing good for the world?
Well, I don't know that there's anybody else who actually, what I would describe it as, uses the coin directly for doing good. I mean, obviously you can own crypto and sell it and then use the cash to do it. But I think we're probably, as far as I know, and I'm sure somebody will tell me if I'm wrong, the only cryptocurrency mm-hmm. that directly uses the crypto to do good things. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the things we're just starting on, I mean, we have a lot of different companies that we now can get product and services with using Spotcoin, which is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The one I like most recently was there's a charity which does grows food and grows flowers and all sorts of things for people in need, and they were in need of both plants to and vegetables to plant and so on, but also for manure. And it sounds a terrible thing, but I was able to buy a large quantity of manure, in fact enough manure to do them for a whole year. Using Spotcoin, so that was a wonderful thing. I really like that. That was a really nice use, as far as I was concerned.
I think we're
the only ones who directly use Spotcoin, well, use Twitter for doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing wonderful work, Temple, and I'd like to help you out any way I can, promote it on my show. And it's so good to meet you. I'm so glad that our friend, mutual friend Joe, over in England, referred me to you. What other kinds of projects are you planning for the future?
Well, we have two specific projects that are both just about ready to launch. One is, in fact, a carbon offsetting project. Now, carbon offset, I mean, we all know that we have to do something about carbon and to save the planet and all the rest of it. And people use the expressions very tritely, but in reality, it is something that we have to do something about. Now, what we came up with was that we have various people that we know, which is obviously the business people that we have contact, and we know people who are creating carbon offset projects. So what we decided to do was to make it possible for people to buy carbon offset using Spotcoin. So in the simplest, supposing you decide you want to buy 100 tons of carbon offset for whatever reason, you can come to us and say, I want to buy 100 tons of carbon offset. And you can, if you want, give us cash, you know, give us pounds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also give us Spotcoin. And in fact, the best thing would be if you bought some Spotcoin and then used that Spotcoin to then buy the carbon offset, because we would then be able to use any cash that came our way as an additional giveaway to other charities. But we work with Gold Standard and all the top carbon offset companies and carbon registration companies.
We've
got several fairly large companies that we're talking to who are keen to do, not only to have the carbon offset, but to be doing it in a green way and B, in a sustainable and charitable way as well. And that's what we do.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Let me run an idea by you. I raise funds for clean water for the Hopi and Navajo Indians in northeastern Arizona. And among the Hopi, men live to 44 years and women live to 53 years on the reservation because the water is full of arsenic and radiation, severe radiation amounts. And so I found out about this back in 2018, 4 years ago, and I work with others on this as well. A lot of good people, Mitch Kohayashi, the Moto Peace Project, Martha Chowdhury of another charity in Seattle, and Liam McLaughlin of the Clean Water Foundation in Seattle as well. So we all banded together. We've been raising tens of thousands of dollars for clean water filters so the Hopi and Navajo can have clean water. But what we'd like to do is to put together a clean water coin. And Donna, are you listening? Yeah, Donna, are you there? Okay, well, hopefully Don will come in because Don knows a little bit about crypto coins. I don't myself, but I have put together the people together to create what's called a clean water coin.
Yeah,
That's okay, Don. Yeah, hi, my friend. Yeah. And put together a clean water coin to specifically benefit not only the Hopi and the Navajo in Arizona for clean water, but also other people around the world, especially indigenous people who don't get clean water. I mean, we take often here in the West, we take clean water for granted, but it's not for granted at all in many other parts of the world. And anyway, Temple, I just wanted to run that by you. It's something that we've been interested in here as well.
Well, I'm going to just give you a little bit of a sideshow on that. The first point I'm going to tell you,
okay,
my very first girlfriend was actually a Hopi Indian, and I'm talking nearly 60 years ago, so it's a long time ago.
But, oh well, okay.
We were at school together, and she and I were great friends, and we still are friends. We're still friends.
Wonderful.
The second thing is that what you're talking about, doing a coin for that, is absolutely one of the mm-hmm. best uses, is to actually use the coin for good. I mean, that is, you know, top of the range.
Mm-hmm. Wow, fantastic. That's wonderful. Well, I know Don's been working on it too. Don, would you like to add something?
Yeah, we were hoping to start a crypto called Clean Water Institute. And we got the domain, of course, and we were looking to start an LLC based on that name.
Okay.
And start a coin that would involve three or four corporations or companies. One of those would be in Japan. They work with healing waters sort of thing. Another one would be in Washington State, and they're a foundation that deals in cleaning clean water and clean water filtration systems and filters and providing clean water to natives. And then our media company, which is a corporation since 2006, BBS Network Inc. And then likely one more entity that we were discussing, which I won't go into here, but four companies that kind of go in together on this crypto to develop something that could be used then to raise money to literally help, let's say, clean the waters of the world. That would be ultimately, to be even able to have the ability to clean radiation in Japan, maybe with lasers, maybe with newer vibrational technologies, maybe, you know, even the older, more arcane, esoteric type understandings of prayer and meditation, but also, again, in newer technologies of frequency, light, color, vibration, and so on, to clean waters. And they've been doing that in small parts all around the world, in various labs, various studies, various lakes, from the mad scientist to the more university type studies. So we know it's possible. It's just nobody's raised money and done it aggressively. And I don't know why that is the case, you know, because clean water is the most important thing that we could give to our future generations, and we want to marry that with education. And that's why we're talking with the Japanese firm to really get books and educational materials out that not only promote clean water, but infuse upon the younger generation the necessity of clean water and how to keep it clean. So it's really a way to raise money, not just to clean water and provide clean water to those cultures that can't get it and those cities that need it, urban areas or, you know, otherwise, but also educate primarily the youth.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, all I was going to say was, I mean, I'd be very happy to talk to you, not tonight, but you know, offline, about creating the coin and promoting the coin, because we have some experience doing that, obviously.
Fantastic.
I mean, I
wonderful.
I, I, mean, one of the things, in fact, funnily enough, that we did a lot of work with when I was working with the Gurkhas was, in fact, to do with fresh water and creating wells for them and so on, because they have a big issue with that in Nepal as well, and India and all places mm-hmm. round about there. So I know a little bit about it, not that much, but I know a little bit about it. And I couldn't agree with you more about the education. I mean, one of the things we have is this what we call Gen Z. Now, Gen Z are sort of younger people, and they are the people we have to get the right thinking into, if we can put
right.
it that way, in terms
right.
of the world.
Yeah.
Of
water. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I work with the Emoto Project in Tokyo, Michiko Hayashi, and I know they're on board with it. So it's just a matter of putting it together, Temple, and I'm so glad to talk to you today. It's refreshing to meet someone like yourself who wants to do good for the world, makes the world a better place. That's the purpose of my show and purpose of BBS Radio as well. They provide a platform for a lot of voices out there, all working hard to make the world a better place, and so I'm very happy to be on their network. How long? I missed part of the first part of what's your initial interview because of the volume technical issues. But how long have you been working on the Scott Coin Temple?
Well, I've been involved with crypto basically since they started. So that would be like 2010 really. And I mean, I mm-hmm. like everybody. I bought Bitcoin when it was $100. Well, when it was $100, and when it got to $500, I knew it wasn't really going to get more than that, so I sold them. And I've done that about three or four times as time goes on. You take a bit of a profit, and, you know, then you regret doing that and all the rest of it. So, I mean, time goes on. But what had happened was that I came across Scott Coin. It had been created before I was involved in it. The person was a one-man band, and he decided that mm-hmm. he really wanted out. So late 2015, early 2016, myself and two business partners got involved. So we've been on this journey, a specific journey for Scott Coin, for 7 years now, or six and a half.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We feel quite comfortable in our space, let's put it that way, in terms of what we're doing and how we're doing it. We've created, mm-hmm. amongst other things, a system whereby, just for the technically minded, it's called Layer 2 on the Ethereum network, where you can transfer Scott Coin within its own ecosystem. There is no charge for doing that. It's completely free. There's no transaction fee. And it's instantaneous, which is two things that really don't go together with crypto. So we're very pleased about that. And that gives us actually a lot of advantage when we're talking to people about taking Scott Coin. Because one of the issues they always mm-hmm. have is, we're terrified, we're going to lose it, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Whereas with our system, a lot of the problems get taken away. And that's a big plus point for everybody concerned.
Well, that's great. That's great. That's great, Temple. Regarding your career, have you always had a desire to make the world a better place?
Well, I think the short answer to that is yes.
Okay.
When I was at university many years mm-hmm. ago, I was very involved with various projects that they had going on to do. And I'm just going to use the word charity as a very broad aspect, because charity covers so many mm-hmm. different things, and doing good mm-hmm. covers so many different things. And all through my life, I tried to do, help people if they needed it and so on. But as I say, my main charitable instinct was when I got involved with the Gurkha Welfare Trust, again now many years ago, to help with their lives, basically. We all know the stories about people who need help. It's not that people are always saying, oh, they're lazy, or they don't work, or they don't do the next thing. But actually, an awful lot of them, it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with circumstance. And in order to roll back the circumstance, you sometimes have to do things to help them. And it, it's as simple as that. And you know, either you're a human being and you do that, or you're not a human being and you don't.
I think the world is changing too for the better as people get more aware of that they want to help other people. And often I run into people, Temple, who want to do more than just, I mean, they want to work, but they want to work with a purpose in making the planet a better place and improving society. And Scott Coyne fits in with that. That's a good thing.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, you know, it's very interesting as you journey through life, you kind of meet lots of people and so on. And I would definitely say there is a more awareness nowadays, particularly to do with the planet. You know, there's a lot more awareness that we have to, and water is a part of that, obviously. We have to make sure that it's clean and it's drinkable and so on. And for other aspects of the world as well. And the same with people being kind to other people. You know, you have to be kind to people.
Right. That's true. And then we certainly we need as much of that as possible nowadays.
Absolutely.
From other businesses in the corporate world, how has the reception been?
It's very interesting. I mean, I think I'm right in saying that if you go back, say, two and a half years, there was something like 50 million crypto wallets worldwide. Now there is more than 400 million. So the growth has been exponential for the last couple of years. That creates a situation where people are much more receptive to new thinking. Let's just call it new thinking. From our point of view, we found that once people understand what's going on and how it works, then they're very prone to help. They want to help. People do want to help. There is a groundswell, I think. I don't know if you know the States, so I'm sure it's the same. But certainly in the UK, there is a groundswell of people who now want to help the world, simple as that. And we're finding people are very open to being taught about crypto, and this is a very important part of what we do as well, is education towards this end. I've actually written a book about it, which is a very simple, and what it does is it tries to explain in what we would call simple terms how it works and why it's a good thing and why it should flourish. And people do get it. They do get it, and that's important. So we're worked very hard to get people to understand what it's all about.
Really, from your perspective, Temple, could a model like Scott Coyne for cryptocurrencies, could that be used for really any project to help humanity? Let's say from, from water coins, for example, to building a library for a community in an area, or to lots of things. I mean, environmental cleanup. I mean, you could use it practically for any good purpose, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just you saying about building a library. I mean, I'm going to spend my whole life reading. I mean, so what do you need to build a library? You need some builders. You need bricks. You need plumbers. You need electricians. You need this, that, the next thing. Now within Scotland, which is where we're from, we have all these facilities with people who are taking Scott Coyne. So, for example, we could build a house for homeless people. We've got everybody who would do that. So these are all things that are already being promulgated and worked on. And in the fullness of time, we would certainly intend to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would hope that your interview today sparks people around the world to look at making this planet a better place in a little bit different light. We could use our monetary systems to improve the planet. What do you think on that note? What do you think of the fiat currencies? Do they have much of a future? What do you think? Will they be replaced by coins like crypto coins like Scott Coyne?
Well, this is, I have to say to you, this is something everybody always says to me, and I think I think one of the problems is that people kind of think it's either crypto or it's fiat. Now, I personally, and I repeat, it's personal, it's not government policy or anything, I personally think that there will always be fiat currencies of one sort or another because they will have a purpose. But at the same time, I also think that there will be standing beside them cryptocurrencies. And just on that particular point, you may well know about this, but there is in fact a cryptocurrency in Switzerland called VIR, W-I-R. Now, VIR is an amazing thing. VIR has been going since the 1930s. And it started because there was literally no liquidity in the world in the 1930s. Nobody had the money. The banks, nobody had it. Governments, nobody had it. And some people in Switzerland got together and set up a cryptocurrency called VIR. Basically, it still exists to this day. It's a very it's changed slightly one or two times, but it's basically exactly the same as it was then. And the whole point of now, VIR is held by about 70 or 80,000 people. There is about 70 or 80,000 businesses that use VIR in Switzerland. There is something like 700,000 or 800,000Swiss people who use VIR, and it turns over about $6 or $7 billion a year. Now that is a big add. That is a big add to the GDP in Switzerland. And the thing that I really like about it is, so supposing you want to buy yourself a new, could be anything. Let's suppose you want to buy a new car, and you go into the car showroom in Switzerland, and the man says that's 20,000 Swiss francs or whatever, and you say, well, that's fine, I'll buy it. I've only got 18,000 Swiss francs, but I've got 2,000 VIR. And the guy in the showroom will say, that's absolutely fine. I mean, you get the car, end of story. Now, what he then does is he then can go to his suppliers. You know, he might need whatever it might be, cleaning fluid or, you know, whatever. And he will pay for that in VIR. And the system moves on and it goes on. But the whole point is that it's a complementary currency. So you have, part payment in fiat, part payment in crypto. And I personally think that's how the world's going to go on in the future.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the days of the fiat currency are numbered. And going back to making the planet a better place and helping humanity out, that's what people are interested in. And just helping out, you know, central banks doesn't excite people very much anymore. Especially what they do to us.
Well, I think you're dead right on that. I mean, I actually, just on that particular point, I mean, I read a very interesting article the other day. It was talking about, because people are always saying about Bitcoin uses so much electricity. Part of the article was talking about how much of Bitcoin energy use is actually using renewables, like, you know, water power and sun power and all the rest of it. And the answer to that is that the Bitcoin Mining Council has determined that it's approximately 70%. Now, if you go to the banks, now the banks are obviously largely fed in by the individual countries' power systems. Very, very few of those countries actually have more than about 20% of them. So straight away, never mind the amount they're using, but the actual what they're using is not as healthy as what Bitcoin's doing. And I mean, one of the really clever things that I know people are doing, and I particularly know it's happening in America, there are certain states, I believe, who have basically said you cannot flare gas anymore from wells. And so what the miners are doing is they are installing Bitcoin mining rigs and other mining rigs for different currencies and creating cryptocurrency with the flare off of something that was going to pollute the atmosphere and now is being used for good because it's creating Bitcoin, creating various other things. And that's a wonderful use of the flared gas, and it's a wonderful use of good resources.
Right. Yeah, that's wonderful. Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, as you know, I don't want to get too far off on this subject, but, you know, we haven't been issuing our own currency since 1913 here in the United States. And the value of the dollar, I think, has dropped like 99%, 96%, 97%, really, you know. But it's different with cryptos because you can make it, you can help society. You can structure it so it does help society. And that's different. And that's good. That's what people want, you know.
Well, it's I'm an economist, and it's a very simple formula. You know, if you keep printing banknotes, you create more and more banknotes, and as you create more banknotes, you devalue the value of that particular currency, and that's why we have inflation, and it's why we have huge inflation at the moment, is because there's been absolutely enormous money printing with COVID and so on and so on. But just to take Bitcoin as an example. Bitcoin is set only ever to have 21 million Bitcoin. Now that is not something that will ever change. You will always, if you own one Bitcoin, you will always own one of 21 million Bitcoin. Now, if you go back to the fiat currencies, I mean, the States, are different from every other country. But I mean, for example, if you've got $1 out of, let's just say, $20 trillion at the moment, you used to have $1 out of $13 trillion, and that was worth a bit more.
Right.
But now,
you've
effectively, that's why you've got inflation, because you've got more money in inverted commas, fiat money, chasing the same amount of goods. Simple as that. Hence inflation.
Right. 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 Well, as I'm sure you've heard, Temple, our inflation rate right now under the Biden administration is 40%. Sometimes people say 50%.
Yeah.
And it's extremely high, and that's by design to ruin the economy. And during the early days of the Weimar Republic in Germany in the 20s, how high did inflation go there before everything collapsed?
Well, it is interesting because this is I'm not only an economist, I'm a historian. The Weimar Republic is one of the most interesting periods of human times, because everybody did absolutely everything wrong, what they really did was they got to the point where they said, first of all, right, let's say one gold Reichsmark is worth $1. These are not right figures, but let's just say that's what they're saying. And because of a variety of different things that happened, it became one Reichsmark was only worth like 1 cent over a period of 6 months or something. Now what that meant was you had to have 100 Reichsmarks to buy the same thing as $1 before. And that's what inflation is. Inflation changes the landscape, if you like. But what really happened was that it became so ridiculous, they had no backing at all and no way of checking what was going on. People literally would be getting what one would describe as wheelbarrow loads of currency, because they couldn't actually carry what they were doing. And there were banknotes for, 10 billion Reichsmarks and so on.
Yeah, right.
And it went on. It went on for 2 or 3 years, and it got, the only reason it stopped was because they appointed a chap called Hjalmar Schacht to be chancellor in terms of economics, the Reichsbank, and he said, right, as of today, we're going to have, everybody is going to get 5 new marks. Everybody, that's everyone in the country, rich, poor, whatever. All the old money is going to be burned, and we're going to start with 5 Reichsmarks, and we're not going to print anymore. We're not going to print anymore. And as a result of that, of course, as always happens, people still own the houses they had, they still own the farms, they still own the machine tools, etc., etc., and were able to move along and do stuff. But the whole point was they didn't have any inflation, and the reason they didn't have any inflation was because they weren't printing any more money. And if you move along,
that makes sense.
If you move along to the early 1960s, exactly the same thing happened in Germany. They had a situation where they wanted to expand their economy. And they knew that they would need more Reichsmarks or Deutschmarks at that point to make it work. And what they did was they only printed an increase of 2% per annum of money. So, you know, they started out with, let's just say they started out with 100 billion, and it became 102 billion a year later. And that was enough. And they did that for several years, quite a number of years. And effectively, there was no inflation because there was no money to increase it. And that's where I can see that various governments have gone a bit wrong. There's a variety of good reasons for it. I'm not suggesting there isn't. But they should have been reining back in on the money that's been printed, you know, some time ago, not now. They should have been doing it.
Interesting. Well, just I know this is a side point, but is the inflation as bad in the UK as it is here?
It's not quite as bad. Well, this real question is who knows?
Whether
it's good, bad, or indifferent. But we are as of right now, we're looking at 10% inflation. It has been suggested that the October inflation, which is after only a month away, will be 13%. And that we will be, up to the sort of 20% by next spring. I have no way of telling if that's the truth or not. I have no idea, but it's certainly pretty scary.
Right. I personally think that there's political reasons behind the high inflation here. And it's an attempt to destabilize the United States, and not in a good way either. I mean, face it, this government here is illegitimate. Nobody voted for Biden. Nobody has any faith in the government. It's never seen such a thing in my whole life. And you think people would stand up for it, but I don't know.
It's very difficult. I mean, people tend to live in their own bubble. And people tend to go for an easy life, let's put it that way. And as long as they're reasonably okay, you know, they go along with it. That's a good thing in some ways. But there always has to be somebody who stands up and says no more.
Right. I think there's going to come a point later in the year, early next year, where people are not going to be able to get the goods and services that they can get now, even for the monies that they do have. And I hope they wake up. You know, for example, under this administration in the United States, they've opened the border wide open.